Welcome to the From Battle to Business podcast. In this podcast, business coach and fellow veteran Dean Van Dyke will bridge the gap between service and civilian life, helping guide veteran business owners to supercharge their business and unlock hidden profits. You wouldn't go into battle alone, and now you don't have to in business. Let's get to it.
Welcome to From Battle to Business, where we dive into the raw, real journey from the battlefield to the boardroom. I'm Dean Van Dyke, and I'm joined by Ben Vernon, founder of Vernon Dog Training in Tampa, Florida. With over 6 years of experience, Ben is an expert in balanced dog training, helping owners build calm, confident dogs and stronger relationships. His journey into dog training began in the U.S. Air Force, where he served as a canine handler. Selected for a Secret Service mission in 2020, he worked security for President Trump and gained insight from elite canine handlers who encouraged him to pursue the field professionally. What started as a side project quickly became a passion and a business. When an opportunity to Secret Service fell through, Ben took a leap of faith, moving to Tampa to launch his training company. Today, he's transforming both dogs and their owners through proven, results-driven techniques. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I'm going to assume the weather in Tampa today is pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty warm. Worried about getting sunburned. I think it's like 75 right now. So
okay, that's not bad.
No, it's pretty good.
That is pretty good weather.
That's why we moved down here, or one of the one of about five reasons.
What? Where were you before? I don't remember.
So I grew up in North Carolina. Once I graduated high school, I left for the Air Force. So that was in San Antonio for the basic training, and then my first duty station was in Malmstrom Air Force Base in Montana.
Wow.
So from there, I got stationed in Tucson, Arizona, Davis Monthan Air Force Base, and that's where I did the canine portion of my Air Force career.
Okay. So you went from cold to hot.
Yeah. Yeah. So whenever I filled out my dream sheet, I wanted to go all overseas. And so I put down like Germany, Portugal, Spain, all the cool places. And then whenever I checked on the computer and it said Malmstrom Air Force Base, I just knew I was going to Germany because it sounds pretty German.
German. Yeah.
And it said MT. And I was like, what is MT? I don't know what that is. So I typed it in, Malmstrom Air Force Base, MT, and said Montana. So that was a very disappointing day. And getting stationed in Arizona was phenomenal. Everybody talks about how hot it is and they complain about it. But, you know, when it's 9 months out of the year, you're in winter and it's negative 30, a large portion of that, anything is better, I think. So being able to leave your house is enjoyable. So I loved it. I thought Arizona was fantastic. And so being in Arizona with the heat, I wasn't scared of the heat. So we moved to Florida because, like I said, I don't really want to see snow ever again, to be honest.
Now you want the humidity, though.
Yeah. So I mean, we're close to the beach. Like, I mean, I look on social media and I see places and it's snowing and, you know, people are shoveling snow and scraping ice off their windows and stuff. And I'm worried about getting sunburned. So I think it's a great trade.
I'll take that trade. It's just last week, actually, it was negative 10 here. So,
yikes.
Yeah, which no, you're not going outside with a wind chill of negative 40. You're not going outside.
No, that's terrible.
Yeah. So, well, let's jump into it. So I love dogs. We've had multiple dogs throughout within our family. And I always love, you know, I've trained a dog before, maybe not using the techniques that you've used, but would love to understand, you know, what, I'll give you an example. Our last dog that we had, unfortunately, Buster's no longer with us, but and he was a rescue. We got him from the rescue. Now at the Humane Society, he's amongst other pets, amongst other dogs and other animals. Calm as could be. Funny story. So the following day, my son had a baseball tournament. So I thought, you know what? Let's see how Buster does with people. Well, we were in a park and it had a hill, and my bride came across over the hill, and he just went nuts. He saw all those people. she could barely restrain him, and she's like, "Nope, you're going back to the car." And so I know I had some misconceptions, right, about training him. We tried taking him to some training, but he could not be around other dogs. And so I would love to learn what could we have done better, or what did we misunderstand about him? Because it was, he was a loving dog. I mean, he loved us to no end. We loved him to no end. But when the doorbell rang and he thought somebody was going to come into his home, it was game on. And so we know a little bit about his backstory, but what could we have done better?
So I mean those three things that you just said, that covers the majority of the issues that I deal with of my dog is overly excited or reactive is another way of looking of calling it to people. My dog is reactive to other dogs, and my dog is reactive to the doorbell. That takes up a huge bulk. So what happens? One way to look at it is not every dog wants to be around other dogs or other people. So it could be a, hey, I don't really want to do that. So think about like public speaking. People hate public speaking. And some people do really well with it. Some people love, just talking to people and hanging out, but other people, it's like the worst thing ever, and they will do anything they can to not get on stage. So if you think about it kind of that way, how often are people that like kind of antisocial, and they don't really want to interact with people, and then now you're forcing them to. So it could be that, or it could be just like, hey, that's a dog that I get to play with. So the more that you let your dog play with other dogs or interact with other dogs or just be around other dogs like that on or off leash, the more that you're creating a problem because you don't. What happens is we look at the world one way and we expect our dogs to look at it that way. Everybody has a worldview and a perspective. And so we're thinking, like, hey, I want my dog to be quiet. I want my dog to not pull on the leash. I want my dog to do these things. But your dog's like, I want to get over to that pole and pee on it. I want to go get pet by that random person. So what I tell everybody is you should limit the people and dogs that your dog interacts with. So I have a 2-year-old. I wouldn't let you hold my kid. I don't know you, right? Or
That's fair.
vice versa. Like you wouldn't let me do that, right? Like I wouldn't. You said you're married. You're not gonna let me take your wife, for a drive or any, like all these things are weird, right? But with our dogs, we just think like my dog needs to be pet by you, or I need to pet your dog, or we start to say that these things have to be done. But if you replace dog with child, wife, friend, whatever, like it's not okay. So what does that do though?
Interesting.
Is the more that you, let's say every time I walk my dog on the leash, I live in a busy area, and let's say I come in contact with 10 people on the walk, and he gets pet by 10 people every single time. You see how a dog reacts whenever they're being pet. They love it. They think this is great. So every time they see another person, they go, oh, hey, you get to pet me. Like, if you think about petting as like them finding $20, well, now your dog's gonna be looking for how can I find $20, So whether that's with dogs or people. So the more that you limit their interaction with other people and other dogs, then the less likely they're gonna pull because they don't see it as rewarding. Now, I'm not saying you can't let your dog play or interact with other dogs, but that they shouldn't be on a higher priority level than you, right? Like your wife can have other friends, but you should be her best friend, right? That's the whole point of marriage. So with your dog, if you have friends that come over to your house, I think they can pet your dog and they can play and interact with your dog, but I don't think that random people should. And I don't think random dogs should. And also with dogs, we really don't know like what could happen, right? Because you don't know what my dog is capable of, or has my dog been in an attack or just in a weird situation? Like, how many times do you go out in public and you're like, I don't feel comfortable here? Whether it's the location, whether it's, it's nighttime, you're at the ATM and you're worried about like, hey, something bad could happen, right? There's all these things
That's right.
that can change the mood. And so you don't know what you're putting your dog into that situation. Now, the last thing, the doorbell. So what happens is all dogs hate the mailman. That's something you hear very commonly, right? This is a huge stereotype. Why is that? If I'm your mailman, I don't know you. I don't care about you. I don't know you have a dog. I don't care about your dog, right? And I have to hit up 100 houses and then I get to go home or whatever their schedule is. So you ordered a package from Amazon. I walk up, I drop the package off, I turn around and I leave. I probably have AirPods in. I don't even hear anything going on,
Right.
right?
Don't even
So
recognize you.
your dog sees me out the window and goes, hey, what are you doing here? All fearful and not liking this because there's a weird guy coming up to his house, right? So what does your dog do? He might do a light little barely audible, like even to you inside the house, you wouldn't hear that. So, but what happens? I drop the package and I turn around and I leave. So your dog believes that he did that. He doesn't understand how things work. He doesn't understand that you ordered a package. I'm delivering that package, right? You look out and you see me in a uniform, whether it's UPS, FedEx, DHL, Amazon, post office, whatever, and you immediately go like, oh, that guy doesn't matter. And you turn around and leave, right? You look at this uniform and you push it off as like, not a big deal. He doesn't know that. He doesn't
Right.
see that. He doesn't care about that. So the next day, here I am again, dropping off a package. Well, now your dog goes, hey, I told you not to come back again, and you're back on my property. So what does he do? Instead of it being a light, well, now it's a bark, bark.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, don't come back again, or else, and it gets worse and worse and worse until eventually, now your dog sounds like he's going to kill somebody. Now your dog is jumping at the door and he's scratching the windows and he's knocking the blinds off. So now it's at an audible for me. And so then what happens? Well, now I'm reacting. I'm jumping,
Right.
right? Because it's like, oh, hey, it's a big dog. And a lot of dogs have really mean sounding barks. My border collie, he's got one of the meanest, loudest barks. If you saw him come out of the behind the corner, you'd be like, from you? Like, wow, that's impressive, So it could even be a small dog, but I think like, oh man, like that's a scary dog. And now I
Right.
might even run away, right? And so I'm feeding your dog in this situation and teaching him that he can win. So there'd be a whole process we would do to work with that and to help that, but ultimately to teach him like, hey, that what you're doing has zero control over him leaving, right? So that's the difficult of the situation.
So you mentioned or you talk about balanced dog training. So how is that different than some of the other approaches that are out there?
For which part exactly? One second, sorry.
So like with dogs that may have like behavioral issues, is there when you refer to like balanced dog training, what
Sure.
I get what's the difference with that compared to I'm trying to think of other dog training techniques, but I can't think of any.
So there's really about three. And
Okay.
so I would be in the middle. So you have your purely positive or force-free or now I'm sure they have other words that are going to be basically the same thing. So that's the first part. And then the second part. So if you look at it as a spectrum, so on one end you have your force-free, you have your very gentle. They don't use corrections, they don't use tools, they don't use anything. And it's strictly treats and praise. And I'm probably even dumbing it down. And just like with anything, whoever you talk to, like you're right or you're wrong. So, but then the other part is going to be there's compulsion and or compulsive training. And that is going to be like very hands-on. That's very, you could say like aggressive. You could say very heavy-handed. And
Okay.
so they used to train dogs a lot more compulsively, and they've learned a new techniques and better techniques over time, and people have gone further and further towards that force-free side. Now, a balance trainer is what I am, and you're taking force and you're taking rewards, and you're morphing those together to where
Okay.
you're trying to be as balanced as possible and you're trying to be as fair as possible. So there are times where you have to apply force. Now, force sounds bad, right? I'm forcing you to do something, but it could be for your benefit, right? If you're standing in the road and you don't hear a car coming and I tackle you out of the road, I forced you, right?
Right.
But that was for your benefit, it's for your safety. Now, then there's other parts of you, me and you are standing at Walmart in the aisles and you're not paying attention and somebody's coming by and I lightly push your shoulder and go, hey, they're trying to get by. Well, I forced you out of that, right? So
True.
there's different levels of different things. So even when your dog is on a leash and you're pulling them to go one way or another, that could be considered force. So that's where I'm saying like it is difficult whenever you talk about the force-free idea, because where do you draw the line on that? So for me, I try to make things as fair as possible. I do use tools. I do use so like training tools, whether that's I use prong collars, e-collars, slip leashes. But I also try to make it as fair and enjoyable for your dog as possible. So using toys, using a ball, using food, treats, whatever motivates your dog. So there is a balance. Now, when I first started as a canine handler, the Air Force and the military in general is way more compulsive. And that's how I learned, and that's what I did. But as I started learning and listening to other people, listening to different podcasts, reading different things, I have shifted more to that po more positive side. And so that's the balance, is you're trying to figure out exactly where to flow without being too much on either side.
That makes sense because I know the way I was trained to train a dog was compulsive. So my oldest brother was a canine handler, and he learned, actually he brought the dog program into the sheriff's department. And so how he learned how to control Hondo was compulsive. It was and that's how he taught me. And there was some of it I struggled with from just, when you're heavy-handed like that, but so from a behavior perspective, what's the most challenging type of dog you've had to train?
I got bit by a cattle dog early last year, so that was probably the worst. So I mean, they say it's a very common saying of it's not if, but when you get bit. If you're a dog trainer, dog handler, you're in the industry of some sort. So I went from 2018 to last year without getting bit. So I mean, I feel like I'm pretty good
That's pretty
at
good.
not getting bit. And there's some different, you pick things up, you learn about body language and body posturing, different things. And so you're looking for ways to not get bit. So for him, the hard part was he came to me with a bite history, and that was what we were supposed to work on. And he showed zero issue with me the entire 2 weeks and like 3 days that I had him. And so I was planning on like sending him home, like, hey, I don't see an issue. Like I've put your dog through a lot of things. And like I tried to even set up scenarios to where he would bite me just to see like what would happen and to do it safely and make sure that everything is okay. Because when I'm sending a dog back, I got to make sure to the best of my ability that they are safe. So with him, he was in, I have a kennel in my car, and I worked him and he did great. And so I went to put him back in the car and I shut the door and I was like, ah, man, I left his collar on. I want to take his collar off. And so I reached in, and as I'm reaching in, he's in the very back of the kennel, all the way leaned back. And then as I put my hand in there, he like puts his paw up to like block me. And I was in my head, I saw that and knew that's weird. Like he's being very defensive. He's being very like, hey, get away from me kind of thing. And I told myself, no, I don't think it's a big deal because he hasn't done anything like to me. So I think we're past that. And so he bit me on my wrist and on my forearm. And then to get him off, I had to stick my thumb of my right hand into his mouth to open it. And then he clamped down on my right thumb. And
Oof.
I really thought he's gonna bite my thumb off. So that was pretty scary. But shut the door, and once the adrenaline wore off and I didn't pass out, I stood up and I put the leash on him again. It took me a minute to get the leash on because now he's freaked out. Now he's acting
Right.
like all kinds of, me and you get a fist fight, we take a 5 minute break, and then it's like, all right, shake my hand. You're not going to shake my hand, right? So,
Well, I may shake it, but then you might get something else after I sh while I'm shaking it. So,
for sure.
yeah.
So immediately as I'm sitting there, I'm thinking like, I have to get this dog out right now and work him because I can't let him think that he won. So the difficult of that situation is he bit multiple people before. So the story I'm going to say right now sounds bad, but it's not bad. Don't look at it as a bad way. But the owner, he has a property, and I think he does like construction of some sort. And so as he's getting his trucks ready, he had his dog tied up to a tree. Not a bad, that sounds bad, but I don't think you can say that without it sounding bad, but it wasn't bad. He just had him literally just tied up to a tree, just as he did some work. His friend or a guy that works with him or something saw the dog, walked over to the dog. So imagine he's walking across, a property towards this dog. He reaches down, he tries to pet the dog. Or no, he tries to I guess he went to give him a hug and the dog bit him.
Of
So
course.
if you look at it from the dog's perspective, he's at the edge of a property, some weird guy walks directly towards him, bends down and grabs him. Understandable on why you would bite him. Now that's not okay. We don't want them to do that, but you can understand how that would make sense to your dog. So now what the difficult part of that process is, the dog learned that he, in order to create space, all he has to do is bite. Because what happened to that guy? Well, he walked away. Right? So that dog won, you could say, in the basic terms. So what I had to do with that dog is to show him, just because you bit me doesn't mean I'm leaving. Doesn't mean you're getting away from this. Doesn't mean that we're going to stop doing whatever I wanted you to do. And it's not an alpha thing. It's a, you're not going to bite and you're not going to win.
Right.
And so then the difficult process was, everything was going great for 2.5 weeks. Well, now he bit me. So now he had to stay another 2.5, 3 weeks or whatever it was. I don't remember how long he stayed, but it was a minute because now we got to work through it. Like I said, right now, me and you are cordial and we're having a conversation and things are going great. And, but if I, insulted your wife and you punch me and then we fight and then, we're, and then we go like, all right, we're going to go to work together. Well, probably not, right? It's probably going to be very difficult
Awkward.
to get along with each other, right? So now the difficult part about when it comes to a dog biting another dog or another person is you can never guarantee that's not going to happen again. For me, I've never been in a fight. I've never punched somebody. I've never been punched. I've never, so that's not even something that I really think about. Versus if you are a fighter, you typically hear of those type of people getting in fights often. Why? Because they've done
Right.
it. They know what this is like and they're comfortable doing it. So when it comes to your dog, if they've learned that this is how they're successful, so I told the guy, hey, you can never fully trust this dog in these situations. It doesn't matter who, what trainer you go to. You could go to the best dog trainer in the world, top of the line guy. That guy's never gonna fix your dog, in quotation marks. So you can work through it and to show him like, hey, that's not acceptable, but never 100%. It might be like 90%, but
But
if
there's
your
always that
dog,
one time.
there's always that one time, and that might be 6 years from now, So that's the difficult part of dog training, and that's the hardest part, I would say, is those types of situations.
So we've been talking a lot about the dogs. So let's chat about the owners, because we as
Sure.
owners, we buy dogs, or we acquire dogs for many different reasons. And it comes with a lot of responsibility, which I don't know that a lot of people realize, right? Unless they read the literature they're given. So how do you're training the dogs, but then how do you train the owners to be successful with the dogs?
Well, the first thing that I wish people would do is really research the breed on that they're interested in getting. That's the most important thing. And there's a lot of things to look at. So you're in Missouri, is that what you said?
South Dakota.
South Dakota, that's right. Super cold. So it would be appropriate for you to get a husky. It would
Had
be a
one.
that makes sense. So it would be a very appropriate for you to get a husky or a maybe even a Saint Bernard or
Huh?
whatever type of dog that it would be normal in that climate. I don't think it is appropriate to really have a husky or a Saint Bernard or a Tibetan Mastiff or something like that in Florida. I don't. And if you have one, I'm not bashing you or anything, but I do think, putting the dog where they're best suited is important. And that's one part of it. The next part is, what is that breed designed to do? If you're not living an active lifestyle, if you're not going to, really work your dog, you shouldn't get a border collie. You should not get an Australian Shepherd. You should not get a husky.
Or
There's
a
a lot of
lab.
the or lab, yeah. Now, then there's other parts of like, do you have a kid? Do you want to have a kid? And in these situations, I would be more careful about getting like a pit bull or any type of power type breed because they are going to be, especially if you, and it's not necessarily even to bash the pit bulls, but a pit bull terrier, that's in the name. And there's, a pit bull is a huge umbrella. Everybody just says like that's a pit, and you could get into debates about what's the difference and everything. But if you just look at a terrier is designed to hunt and to kill and to bite. And so when you pair that with a really powerful breed like the pit bull or American Staffordshire Terrier or whatever, then you could have a lot more issues. So I personally am very hesitant about having kids around dogs just because it doesn't take much for something bad to happen.
Right.
Excuse me. So I'm in Tampa. Orlando is about an hour and a half away. There's a story out of Orlando of a 9-year-old boy who was mauled to death
Oh.
by a dog. He was out biking and he saw an off-leash dog and he got off his bike and went over to pet the dog and he died. So now that's, you could say that's just a one-time situation, but I think you should be extremely careful. And as a dog trainer, I severely limit the interactions with my dogs personally and my kid, my 2-year-old. And it's going to take a while, and I don't know how old necessarily, before I start letting more interactions happen. But just being extremely careful of that because you don't know what can, like, people forget that, dogs are carnivores. Dogs are,
True.
they originated with wolves, and they all have a different pathway, and they all have a different breed standard and job. But they're little killers, and so you're putting your child in that situation, and bad things can happen. So that's another thing to think about. So activity level is super important. Family size is really important. And then, what are you guys going to be doing with the dog? And then also thinking, like, not only what are you doing right now, but what are you going to be doing in 10 years? So there's a lot of factors that go into it. And even like smaller breeds, they live longer. So, I mean, if you got a Chihuahua thing or a Maltese or something like that, that might live 16, 18, 20 years. So you got to think, like, hey, are you committed to this dog, and are you going to be able to take care of that dog? So that's one of the biggest things is just looking at what would be the best thing for you. And they have like different, I know AKC on their website, they have a quiz kind of thing to see like what dog breed might be best suited for you kind of thing. If you reach out to another trainer, I'm sure they'd be happy to help you and work through that and help you analyze what would be best for your situation. But so now back to your main question was how do I train the owners of what's going on? So what I like to do is I like to take what I know about the owner, and I try to use that as examples to help them understand what we're talking about. So I have a kid, so it's a pretty common one that I use is talking about my kid. And if I my 2-year-old right now, we're going through potty training, we're going through, hey, come here. You need to follow through with that and make sure that he listens, and also being like age appropriate and taking things as we go, right? So that's one thing. If I know that the owner is really into sports, I try to use that as examples and analogies to help them understand what we're talking about and everything. But my goal, and this is the goal of every dog trainer, I would assume, is to make sure that the owners know exactly how to continue training their dogs, because if they don't know that, then they're going to fail. And it doesn't matter how much effort that we put in the training, whether we do the lessons or whether we do the board and train or whatever, we have to make sure that the owners know what to do at that moment, and why is their dog acting this way, and what can they do to help prevent that. Because you got to make sure that they understand that, just like we talked about with the doorbell, your dog doesn't understand that, oh, hey, the FedEx guy, yeah, we don't care about him, he's cool, right? You don't know that guy. He could be a terrible person, right? But you trust him. Why? Who knows? He's bringing you your stuff, so that's all you care about. Now, if it's like 10 o'clock at night and there's a knock at the door or something going on, well, now we're different conversation, different. Now you're not okay with it, right? But it's super important to try to understand like why your dog is doing this thing, and then how can we fix that? Even with the dog that bit, it makes sense why he did that, but how do we fix that? And how do we prevent these things from happening in the future? And how do we prevent it from happening from the start is really important. So that's my goal, is to teach the owners as much as possible what to do and why their dogs are doing it. So even just little stuff, like on my social media, I try to talk about things, whether it's on my stories or making reels or whatever. This is what's going on, and this is what you should do. This is something that you should be thinking about, because just like with your job and what you do, it's going to make total sense for you to do whatever. But to me, I don't know that's important. I don't know that's a thing. And so
True.
we have to make sure that I have all this information. How do I dump it onto you as effectively as possible?
Yeah, that's got to be, that's really got to be key, right? Because then once you step out of the picture, then it's the dog owner and the dog, and to reinforce that training, because that's very important. Because you put them through training. You want to make sure that they, you don't let it all go by the wayside. And then, because that becomes an even bigger problem. But so when you started this journey of dog training, you were a canine handler in the Air Force, and I never asked, what kind of canine handler were you? Was it drugs or?
So it depends. So for everybody, it depends. For me, I did both. So a dog is only trained on one, explosives or drugs,
Got it.
because if your dog is sitting, you need to know, like, hey, am I opening that drawer or are we running
Right.
away? So they're not even in the same, like, building whenever one or the other is out. So whether drugs or explosives. So
Okay.
my first dog, his name was Caro, and he was a patrol, so he could search and bite people, and he was a drug detection. And then my last two, Frankie and Silky, they were both bomb detection and patrol certified. So they were
Okay.
searching for explosives and they could find people. So what was your question after that? You said
No, I
what?
was, actually, I think I forgot what the question was, but
Oh, you said how you didn't ask how, like, what type of dog trainer was I, or dog handler was I?
Yep, that was a question. So
Okay.
when you left the military and the Secret Service didn't work out, and then you started training dogs. Were you missing the dog handling and dog training aspect of it? Is that how you got into it?
So it started pretty immediately. So the total process for me with the Secret Service was a year. So 6 months of it was in the Air Force of me just hanging out. And so I did, I never took leave. So I had like 90 days of leave.
Oh, wow.
So I pretty much went on terminal in like September, October, and I got out officially in January, I think. 11th or something was my, like, official
Okay.
day out, but I think I left in like December 1st. So I got to my parents' house end of December. So after Christmas and during all that, I was just kind of hanging out, and I didn't know what else to do. I didn't have like a lot of transferable skills because I was a security for nuclear weapons in Montana, and then I was a canine handler. So I mean, like, I was around dogs and stuff, and that's really
Right.
all I knew. And so I also didn't even know people would pay for dog training. I didn't know that was a thing. I grew up that dogs were tied up outside. Like, that was just the
Agreed.
environment that I lived in, and that was normal. So to think about, people paying for training, that was outside of my realm of possibilities. My parents didn't, they don't like dogs. So I never had a dog. So my first dog was technically my military working dog. And then
Okay.
we got our own personal dog after that. So my dad's a pastor of a church in North Carolina, assistant pastor. And so there's quite a bit of people at that church, and my family's been there for my whole life, so they had a lot of connections, and so they have a lot of friends on Facebook. And so my mom shared, "Hey, Ben is training dogs, and if anybody's interested." And I didn't think much would come from it, and so I started an Instagram page and a Facebook page, and I just started posting stuff. I knew nothing about what to do or anything, and people started reaching out, and eventually I started, I was working like 10 hours a week or something, and just doing a lesson here, lesson there. And I was making roughly the same I was in the Air Force. And I was like, this is pretty sweet. And
That
so
is sweet.
I was like, I'm doing something that's really cool. And I was working like 60, 70 hours a week in the Air Force. And then here I'm working 10. And I was like, this is awesome. And so as I started to, because I didn't have, I was stuck. I was in a really weird spot because I didn't want to stay in North Carolina. I knew either I was going to go in the Secret Service and I was waiting to hear back, or if that doesn't work out, I think this dog training thing is going to be cool. And I want to go do this where I want to live. And so we were looking at Florida and Texas and Arizona and some other places. And so my wife actually wanted to move to South Dakota. And I was like, absolutely not. There is no way I would ever go up there. But we were looking, just where to go. And so I wasn't really trying to put a lot of effort into my business because I didn't necessarily want to really grow it, but I also wanted to make some money as I was doing it. So that was the weird predicament I was in. But yeah, I really just did on accident. I accidentally fell into the coolest opportunity possible. And so once I knew that this was profitable, I knew this was something that was enjoyable and that people would have a need for, well, then I started looking at what are the dog friendly cities? Like, I don't even know what that would look like. And at that time, there were several articles talking about Tampa was rated number one dog friendly city in the United States. And so I lived in Montana. I didn't want to live in the near snow. And then I always wanted to live at the beach. I thought that was the coolest thing. And so I looked at a map and I was like, Tampa is on the beach. And it's not, it's like an hour plus, but
Close enough.
it's pretty close. Yeah. So I was like, this is it. And so, whenever they told me July, middle of July, that, hey, we don't want you for the Secret Service. And we moved down here in September. So it was a very quick process. We were just like, this is where it needs to be. I was living with my parents at the time. And so, I mean, they were as good as it could be in the situation, but, they were living on their own for 8 years because I was the last kid. And then here I am, a grown man and his wife living with my mom and dad. And, it's kind of like we were both ready just to get out and,
Sure.
let's do our own thing. So we're just trying to do it as quick as possible. So we moved down here to Tampa. We didn't have a friend or family member down here. We didn't know anybody that even been to Tampa, and we were just like, this is where we want to be. So we've been here since.
Well, that's a great story, and that's how a lot of business owners get started. They fall into something that they're passionate about. And so as we land the plane, I'd love to let my audience know where they can go and find out more about you and the amazing work that you're doing.
Yeah, it's a Vernon Dog Training everywhere that you can look it up. So I'm on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok. I do most of my stuff on Instagram, and then I'm trying to do more long form stuff on YouTube. So Vernon Dog Training.
All right. I will definitely include that in the show notes. And Ben, it's been great having you, and wish you the best with your dog handling.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. In order to help others, please subscribe and share this show up with other veteran business owners in your network. If you want specific guidance, feel free to book a complimentary call with Dean at deanvandyke.com. Remember, you wouldn't go into battle alone, and now you don't have to in business.